Hi, and welcome to The Midlife Feast, the podcast for women who are hungry for more in this season of life. I'm your host, Dr. Jen Salib Huber. I'm an intuitive eating dietitian and naturopathic doctor, and I help women manage menopause without dieting and food rules. Come to my table, listen and learn from me, trusted guest experts in women's health, and interviews with women just like you. Each episode brings to the table juicy conversations designed to help you feast on midlife. And if you're looking for more information about menopause nutrition and intuitive eating, check out the Midlife Feast community, my monthly membership that combines my no-nonsense approach that you all love to nutrition with community so that you can learn from me and others who can relate to the cheers and challenges of midlife. Hi, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of The Midlife Feast. It has been a while since I have recorded a solo episode, so let's hope that I remember how. I'm just kidding, of course, but I just love having conversations with people, so I haven't had the opportunity to kind of schedule myself into my own podcast. So here we are, though, and this has actually been one that has been on my to-do list for a while, and it might become a regular series. You guys will have to tell me what you think about it, but I wanted to start this kind of Dear Diet Culture Diary series. So I think we all remember Dear Diary from our teenage years. And one of my missions with this podcast has been to create community, to share stories, to make sure that anybody who is going through any stage of midlife, especially if they feel like their relationship with food or their bodies or their self-esteem is on shaky ground, anybody who's going through any of that, I want you to know that you're not alone. So that's been one of my missions, is to create community virtually with this podcast. And so I talk to a lot of people on a regular basis, whether that's in the community or on social media, through email, my one-on-one practice, whatever it is. And there are some themes that are very regular. There are some topics that come up time and time again that I think will be helpful for everyone to know about, because almost everyone that I talk to will say, I feel like there's something wrong with me because, and I'm going to share kind of what everyone says in a second. And almost every time, the first thing I say is, I can't tell you how common that is. And I want you to know that you're not alone. So in the theme, or in the spirit of this Dear Diet Culture Diary, let's talk a little bit about what some of those really common recurring themes are. So like I mentioned, almost every discussion I have will start with, I don't understand what's wrong. I've tried everything, done everything multiple times over. There must be something that I'm missing, and I just need someone to tell me what to do. I can already hear your heads nodding in agreement. So I think it's important to recognize that anybody who is, I'm going to put a line in the sand and say over 40. So this would be born in 1984 or before. Anybody who is, you know, around that age, we were exposed to some very common themes around food, around health, around our bodies. We were all educated about health and nutrition in a very similar way. And of course, this was pre-Google, pre-internet. What we were taught about food and nutrition came from school, so textbooks, came from our families. So what we were exposed to around the dinner table, the conversations that we overheard our parents having about themselves, to themselves, with their friends and family, and some very key media exposures. And I think anybody who grew up in the 80s, even if you had cable and all the bells and whistles, we were still talking about really a handful of channels. Everything was network TV. So I think there was a lot more shared experiences around what we were seeing. And I've shared experiences before around, you know, remembering watching Oprah and observing her own journey with her body. You know, things like Slim Fast commercials and Richard Simmons. And, you know, we had a lot of shared experiences that I think we don't have anymore. You know, we haven't had cable in over 10 years. Lots of people don't. I now live in Europe. I don't have the same media exposure. So there's a lot of things that I feel completely out of the loop with. And I'm okay with that. But when I think about the conversations that I have with people kind of my age, give or take 10 years, we all have these things, I guess, these events that we remember. And they were really key in shaping our beliefs about ourselves, about our bodies, about health, nutrition. So I'm rambling a little bit, but I'm getting to this point of there are kind of three beliefs that I think are very ingrained in our generation. And the first is that if you eat right, if you eat the right things, you can prevent or avoid or treat every possible health outcome and consequence. So we started using the term, you know, lifestyle diseases in the late 80s, early 90s. There started to be a lot more focus on personal responsibility with health, which ultimately isn't a bad thing. But what it translated into was a lot of shame when people felt like they were trying to do the right things, but it wasn't working. So this belief, and I see this come up now as I'm having these conversations with people in midlife, and maybe their health is changing and their cholesterol might have gone up a little bit, or maybe they now have diabetes and they feel like they've done something wrong. And because we also had this kind of exposure to like quick fixes, so just have two shakes and a sensible meal, or, you know, Special K, have Special K cereal twice a day. Like there was this belief that we just had to find the right quick fix. And so I think that that's part of our generational programming around food that takes a bit of time. It really doesn't take as much time as you would think, but we need to examine your beliefs around food. And so often when people will say, oh yeah, I completely relate to that, and we start to go through, well, what are your beliefs about food? A lot of them we've known not to be true for a while. So, you know, carbohydrates is the one that I bring up all the time. But, you know, I think anybody who was dieting in the 90s was really exposed to carb phobia and was really exposed to, you know, this trend around fat is good and carbs are bad. And so once we start to talk about carbohydrates in a more neutral landscape, with more neutral language, they just become a food choice. They're not a loaded gun. But so that's just an example of one of the ways that if you think, oh yeah, I definitely relate to that, I feel like it's my fault or I've done something wrong, just try and think about where did that programming come from? Where did those beliefs come from? And is there anything that we can do to update those beliefs? The second really common shared belief is that weight, well, the belief is that weight is a proxy for health. And what I try and teach people is that it's not. And I think that because we were almost the first BMI generation, I mean, BMI really didn't take hold until the 90s, you know, as I recall, probably a little bit before that, but certainly it was front and center in every discussion around weight and health, you know, from 1990 onward. And as a result, everyone really kind of internalize this idea, well, if I can just get into a healthy BMI range, or if I can just get into that BMI range for my height, then that is going to mean that I'm healthy. And I'm not going to get into all of the problems with BMI, but I will just say that it is an oversimplification to think that we can just take, you know, height and weight, plug them into a formula, and get a meaningful number and meaningful information from that, because there are going to be many variations of healthy bodies, of health, that will not fit into that. So not getting into that discussion, maybe that's another topic for another day. But I think that many of us in this generation have this belief that, you know, weight is a proxy for health. And if I'm in a healthy weight range, then at least that's healthier. And I do want you to challenge that, because health isn't actually something that we can define universally. Health is going to be individual. Health is going to depend on things like access to healthcare. It's going to depend on your genetics. It's going to depend on what other resources and supports that you have, but it also depends on your goals. And I think that we forget that, you know, we're not just trying. We don't want people just to get to a number, obviously. We want them to feel like what they're doing, which is almost giving you a hint of the third one, but kind of what they're doing, what they're choosing to do more often is helping them to live better in their bodies. Not just look better, not just weigh less, not just fit into clothes in a way that they think matters, but to actually feel like they're living their best life in the body that they have. And all too often, I see people making food decisions and movement decisions and just decisions in general using the filter of, is this going to help me lose weight? Because weight is a proxy for health, and weight is a proxy for happiness, and weight is a proxy for all the things. So that's kind of number two. And the third one, which when I've shared this one on Instagram before, it always blows up a little bit because I think people don't like it. I think that it challenges some people's beliefs, but ultimately, I believe it to be true. And that is that weight is not a behavior. So when I say that, and it's not just me, there are many other people who work in the health at every size and intuitive eating space who say this. We don't choose what the number on the scale says. We can choose what we eat or don't eat. We can choose how we move or don't move. We can choose what time we go to bed. We can choose how we manage stress. We can choose whether or not we consume alcohol. We can choose many, many things that will influence our health that are choices. But whether or not those choices translate into the number that we think that we want on the scale, that probably isn't the case. So when we say that weight is not a behavior, it's because weight regulation is complex and has so much more to do with the interplay of genetics, environment, access to healthcare, health, medications. There's so many influences on the number on the scale that we can't assume that we can all just choose, because we can't. So when we talk about what is a weight neutral approach, what does that actually look like? What we're saying is, let's not make the number the goal. Intuitive eating isn't anti-weight loss. Intuitive eating doesn't take your autonomy away from choosing whether or not you pursue intentional weight loss. But we do want it to be an informed choice where there's discussion of the risks and the benefits, but also discussion of what are the chances that it's going to work the way that you want it to? Do you want to put 100% of your time and energy and resources and money into pursuing intentional weight loss that has a relatively small percentage chance of success in the conventionally defined way of success? Or do we want to put all of that time, money, energy, effort, emotional investment, financial investment into behaviors that you will want to continue regardless of what happens to the scale? So those three beliefs, I think, are very common to our generation, you know, Gen X, maybe a little older, maybe a little younger, but kind of anybody who was old enough to be consuming media in the 80s and early 90s. I think that this is a really shared experience. And undieting your beliefs around food and undieting your beliefs around weight and health takes time. It doesn't take as much time as you think, but it does take time. It requires what I call like activation energy. Like, you do have to put energy into the process, and you need to be committed to the process, not the outcome. But it doesn't take as long as you think it's going to take, especially when you have some guidance. Doing it alone, of course it's possible. This isn't rocket science. This isn't something that requires a PhD. It's not brain surgery. But you can benefit from learning from people who have walked the path before you, or working with someone who can help you through that path in the most efficient, effective way. So what I want to end with is kind of three questions that you can ask yourself to help you move to the next step. So if everything I've said, if you've just been nodding your head thinking, yep, that's me, I want you to think about these questions next. So first, I want you to draw a circle. So you can draw a circle, you can think about a circle, you can do this later, but if you have a pencil there, pen, whatever, draw a circle. Now, try and answer this question. What percentage of that circle is taken up by food, thoughts, or decisions? And so the circle represents your health behaviors. And if 50% even of that circle is taken up by food, that is maybe overrepresenting it a little bit too much because you're not allowing room for other things. So think about how important is sleep? How important is managing stress levels? How important is movement? How important is social connections? How important is self-care? Do you have room for all that if you're thinking and worrying about food all the time? Probably not. So this is one way to say, is your current relationship with food sustainable? Which is the second question. So trying to think about, okay, here's my percentage of my health behaviors or thoughts about, you know, health that are taken up by food. Can I keep doing that forever? Can I keep giving 50, 60, 70, 100% of my thoughts and energy and time to food? Most people, I think, would say no. But let's just say that you think, hey, you know what? I think that my relationship with food is actually pretty good right now. I like how I'm eating. I am enjoying food, whatever that means for you. I just don't like that I'm not losing weight, which is a very common thing that I hear from people. They'll say, you know what? I've spent a lot of time learning how to cook or learning how to enjoy these foods, learning to like these foods. And I feel like everything I'm doing is great, except I'm not losing weight. Then I would actually like you to flip the script and say, okay, if everything about my relationship with food and how I eat is actually working fairly well, then can I find a way to validate that and not give the scale so much power? So that's kind of another way of trying to flip the script, is saying like, okay, if your relationship with food is serving you in so many other ways. Let's say that you've added more fiber and your cholesterol has gone down, or you've added more protein and you're building muscle and feeling stronger. Those also need a substantial piece of the pie. And thinking about, you know, what you would like to do. So of course, in intuitive eating, we always talk about adding in, right? So nutrition by addition, not subtraction. And I think it's great to have goals. So in the Midlife Feast community, every month we choose a theme. And in that theme, people are invited to either make a food goal, a movement goal, or a mind goal. Because I think that working on ourselves is self-care, but we want it to be flexible and forgiving. We don't want it to be all or nothing. We don't want it to be tied to one be all end all, you know, come hell or high water outcome. We want it to be, feel like it's fun, but also that we're doing something. So I have no problem with goals, and I'm taking back the word challenge because I think that that can help us too. But we want to think about what can we add in. And when you're thinking about that, so whether you are trying to eat more protein because you've heard all the discussions about protein, whether you're trying to eat more calcium or, you know, get more magnesium, or maybe you're just trying to eat more regularly, maybe you're trying to avoid getting too hungry, whatever it is, ask yourself this: will I want to keep doing this regardless of what happens on the scale? And if the answer is no, if the answer is no, I'm only doing this because I think it's good for me, or I think it's going to do what I want it to do, then I invite you to challenge that. Challenge the belief that if you think it's going to result in weight loss, that it's always a good thing. Because if you don't like it, if you don't like the taste, if you don't enjoy making it, if it doesn't work for your family, if it is not adequate, then it is not going to add to your health. It is not going to add to your relationship with food. It's just going to take up more time and space and energy in that circle. So I'm going to end there. So that was the first installment in the Dear Diet Culture Diary series. And I am going to hopefully try and make this a bit more of a regular one. I am always open to suggestions. So if there is a topic that would fall under this umbrella that you would like me to tackle, let me know. I'm also going to include a link to a Google form where you can submit your questions. And let's keep this conversation going, but always try and remember that food matters, but it doesn't matter in the way that we have been taught. And a big part of learning to eat intuitively and learning to trust yourself is learning to challenge the beliefs that you have about food, health, and nutrition. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of The Midlife Feast. For more non-diet health, hormone, and general midlife support, click the link in the show notes to learn how you can work and learn from me. And if you enjoyed this episode and found it helpful, please consider leaving a review or subscribing because it helps other women just like you find us and feel supported in midlife.